Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Well, before we get into the topic of hand, we got a sponsor of this little here podcast, Strike Force Energy. So if you're like us, a little hungover on a Monday, need a little extra pick-me-up, freaking call in the Strike Force. It's a veteran-owned energy drink company. No sugars, no calories, and now they have flavors. So other than the standard, you can also get it in orange and grape. I just picked up the grape. It's amazing. It's like drinking grape Kool-Aid, but it gets you all the way up. And you can pick those up at StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order. So, now that that's out of the way, what are you smoking this week, Brad?
So, we're smoking the Hoyo de Monterrey, the La Amistad cigar. And, you know, this is going to sport an Ecuadorian Habano binder, Nicaraguan, or I'm sorry, Habano Ecuadorian wrapper, Nicaraguan binder, and fillers from Nicaragua and Esteli, Ometepe, Condega, and Jalapa.
Yeah, pretty much something from like all of their cigar making regions. And this is also a, you know, the translation of Amistad is the friendship. And it's, you know, also kind of it's a collaboration cigar between AJ Fernandez and General Cigar. So a little friendship between companies there. You know, it's actually, it is a Hoyo de cigar, but it is, you know, blended and rolled at AJ's factory. So he's definitely got his touch on this, because this is a lot, I don't know, like more of a full strength cigar than I've seen from Hoyo in a minute.
Yeah, and that was the thing, you know, looking at it is I at first I was like, huh, all right, it's got the, you know, A. Fernandez logo on it and everything, and I didn't really quite put two and two together and be like, oh, it's a collab. But, you know, to your point that, yeah, right off the bat, you know, I'm going to put this cigar, you know, definitely, you know, strong, medium to full. You know, a lot of spice, a lot of, not a lot of complexity and flavor. The spice is the predominant flavor that I'm getting, you know, just off the first third here.
Yeah, it's definitely high in the spice. You know, it's got a nice kick strength. I mean, I said it looked like, you know, it wouldn't be that strong. I mean, it's a little bit lighter in color than what I normally smoke. But yeah, AJ blended this one up good, because like I said, it just starts with that spice kick right up front. And I'm always a fan of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as far as the construction and everything else goes, I mean, it seems to be a very well constructed cigar. I mean, you got two very big, you know, names on this cigar. So anything less than perfection, yeah, I don't think you're going to get with this cigar. And I got to say, man, like, you know, from the price point and everything, I mean, it's nice to get a nice full cigar, you know, at this price.
Yeah, and I'm a friend of Hoyo from back in the day, because I remember one of the first, like, premium cigars I smoked was the Hoyo de Monterrey Excalibur. One of my friends, Mike, had a kid, and that was what he brought to the table to celebrate the birth of his child. And like I said, up until that, I'd been smoking like cheap shit. So it's like the first premium cigar I'd had, and like I said, it, you know, been hooked ever since.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, definitely be more to come about the cigar as we, you know, progress through you know, the segments here. What, you know, I'm saying 5x54 on this. It's not quite a 60, I don't think.
No, mine was the 660, so I don't know if you picked up a different one or not.
Yeah, I mean, it may be the 60. I don't know. The 54, the 60, they're so close.
Yeah, but the wrapper's over there if you want to look. But yeah.
That's effort, my friend.
going from, you know, the topic of friendship with the La Amistad here to people who don't really like each other, werewolves and vampires. Historically, they do not get along.
I know. I mean, so, you know, with no further ado, we're talking about Twilight. Yeah.
No, never. Never. I've gone many years without seeing that movie, and I plan to die the same way without seeing that movie. No, we're talking about the latest installment of the Underworld series of movies, and so we're going to talk a little bit about where it came from and where it's at now and give you a little bit of review. So with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
The war itself had become more perilous. The weapons had evolved. But our orders remained the same. Hunt them down and kill them off, one by one.
They are the immortal damned. One family lusting for power and wealth.
The chain has never been broken, not in 14 centuries.
Another driven by revenge.
Soon we'll defeat the vampires on their own ground.
Blood!
Do you see this human?
He's attractive.
I can't be positive, but I'm beginning to take a liking to following him.
Hello, Michael.
To you. Who are you people?
You're in the middle of a war that's been raging for the better part of 1,000 years. A blood feud between vampires and lycans. Werewolves.
And we're back. Time to talk about some werewolves and some vampires.
Yeah, this time they don't glow in the dark. Or not glow in the dark, but get all sparkly. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we're not talking about Twilight. We've already confirmed that. We're going to be talking about the series of film, Underworld, and its various sequels.
It's many, many sequels.
And one prequel.
And the like six-part like weird like mini-series thing that it spawned off too that I never got around to watching.
Yeah, I didn't know
it was kind of supposed to bridge some of the gaps and stuff like that. I don't know. But, yeah, so Underworld, I mean, you know, we wind, oh, God, you know.
First one came out in 2003, directed by Lynn Weissman, written by Danny McBride. Not to be confused with, you know, the Danny McBride from you know, Her Highness and other such comedy greats. But, no, like the writer.
Yeah, so this was one of the, you know, main characters that really put Kate Beckinsale on the map for me. I don't know what it was, you know. I mean, this is
could it be the skin tight, like yeah, leather outfit?
Yeah,
and,
but she
and
was
guns.
Also just a badass. I mean, you know, the outfit was nice, but I think it was you know the badass persona that you know just kind of took it up a notch.
Yeah, but that I mean, that outfit is iconic, and that's probably like the first thing people like. Know. Like whenever you saw the poster for that in 2003, it was like, I don't know what this is, but. It gives me a special feeling, and I like it. I think I'll see it. But then once you saw, like, the trailer...
It's like Matrix.
Yeah, that's pretty much, yeah, very Matrix-y. Yeah. But then once you saw the trailer, and saw, like, the badass action and gunplay with, like, pretty much every pistol she had, I think it was either full auto or she just had, like, really fast vampire reflexes, because girl did some shooting in these movies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, and that was the thing, man. I mean, this had a all-around balance. I mean, the storyline, I can remember, you know, when I first saw the film, you know, it was quite captivating. Going back and rewatching some of these other films, I'm like, they have not held up quite as well as some others. But, you know, I'm not going to crap all over it. I mean, you know, this is what? Shit, 14 years ago almost? Like...
I think the original one still holds up pretty good. Like I said, as we said,
well,
starring...
I think it was more live. You know, I don't think they relied as heavily on CGI in the first one as much as I don't know. The second one was almost atrocious as far as the CGI was concerned.
But yeah, talking about the first one. Like I said, released in 2003. You know, Kate Beckinsale, Scott Speedman. And also one of my favorite like weird English actors, Bill Nye. He is like, and not to be confused with Bill Nye the Science Guy, but that dude is always creepy as shit. And like, no matter what like movie he is in, I think he really is a vampire, and he just like does his acting thing to get money for blood or something, because the dude is like just stays creepy.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you know, it was such a fitting role. I mean, you've got that, you know, with this the whole dark gothic concept, and you know the very old and you know pure vampire, you know, covens and traditions and all of that history. So there's got to be a creepy factor there.
Yeah, I mean, this movie was, you know, the goth kid, emo kids, like, you know, go-to movie back in the day. This movie influenced style for a while.
I think this movie might have influenced Hot Topic, but luckily the emo thing hadn't really taken off. So, you know, this might have been a precursor. I don't know, though. I mean, this was more on the action than it was, especially in the beginning of the franchise. It was much more action-based. Now, as it progressed, I think they tried to broaden to more audiences and throw in, you know, the love story angle, and then, you know, oh, I'm having a child that's been taken away from me for the child safety, and we'll get into all that later on.
Yeah, because this one, like I said, the story, of course, there is a ongoing war between the vampires and the Lycans, and for some reason, the head of the Lycans, Lucius, is hunting this one human for some reason, and the vampires don't know why. And Selena, Kate Beckinsale's character, is head of the death dealers, the elite special forces of the vampire community.
The badasses that you don't want to fuck with.
Yeah. Who, you know, happens to, you know, the person who's currently in charge of the Covent, Craven, is doing some shady shit and has a plan to take over the coven. So he's been doing some backdoor dealing with the werewolves to end up wiping out the leaders so he can take over the crew.
Yeah, this is where they're trying to, you know, basically overthrow Victor, right? The big head of the coven.
Well, so it was time to wake up because the way they do it is like they rotate like every 1,000 years. Yep. They're like, so Amelia has been running things for 1,000 years, and it's the point where they're supposed to wake up the next guy in line, which was Marcus. And so the plan was to kill off Amelia before she awoke anybody else, and then Craven would just take over. But, of course, Selena decides to wake up her buddy, Victor, and he turns out to be a huge douchebag. And
yeah, double jeopardy, I think, is something that comes to mind.
Yeah, because, you know, like I said, Selena is like 6,000-year-old, but even she doesn't know how the war started. And it turns out that, you know, at one point the werewolves basically worked for the vampires, and Victor's daughter ended up hooking up with Lucius. And, you know, but he's such a, like, you know, pure blood above all else, like, actually executed his daughter in front of Lucius and made him watch. And that's what has started the war that has raged on forever.
So when they were working together, who was the enemy? So it's, you got the vampires working, you know, kind of in cahoots with the, you know, werewolves and stuff. I mean, maybe they're not the best of friends, but, you know, there's got to be a common enemy.
Well, back in the day, is like the, you know, they were kind of like the guard dogs for the vampires, you know, because the vampires, of course, can't walk around in the sunlight, but the werewolves can, so they used them as kind of daytime guard duty.
I mean, fitting you would have a canine. Yeah.
Everybody needs a pet.
I guess so.
But I'm wondering, do baby werewolves turn into puppies instead of like werewolves?
I don't know. I picture almost like a pissed off like gremlin or something. Like, it's kind of small. It's very nippy. It's like a chihuahua.
like the vampire Pomeranian in Blade 3.
Exactly.
I guess, and that was one thing, this movie was kind of like, it reminded me heavily of Blade. I mean, this was like the female version of Blade, nearly.
Yeah, I mean, and
even
I kind of
similar dressing styles.
I mean, I really
trench coats and guns.
You know, kind of treated this as a cross between if Blade were to meet the Matrix.
Yeah.
Like, that's really, you know, how I would sum up these movies. You know, but instead of red pills and blue pills, we got just people's egos.
Yeah.
Like,
And as we discover later on, the whole reason why they're trying to hunt down Michael, he is like the last descendant of Alexander Corvina, who was the first vampire. Supposedly he had two sons that were, one was bitten by a wolf, one was bitten by a bat, and so he's like the original bloodline of what became vampires and werewolves, and they think his blood will basically make them like immortal, or, you know, give them kind of superpowers. And, you know, so he gets bit, and to stop him from turning, Selena bites him and turns him into like the first hybrid, where he has his blood so special he can control the power of both and becomes basically like, I don't know, this big black, you know, monster thing that can just tear shit apart.
It does it so eloquently.
Oh, yeah, it's like not quite werewolf, not quite vampire. It's just like, he's just like, he almost stays like, he almost like goes like full Hulk. I mean, he kind of looks mostly human. He's just completely black and just kind of like swole up like he's been, you know, working out.
I mean, so he's kind of like Venom. Can we introduce Venom into the lichen strain or something? Like, I don't know. That's just kind of how to be. I envisioned it.
And like I said, of course, you know, Lucius tells him who really started the war. And also, you know, turns out that Victor, you know, supposedly, one of the reasons why Selena has always been hunting the werewolves is she was told her whole family was wiped out by werewolves, when that wasn't the case. Because apparently, like, these vampires have kind of evolved. They try not to involve themselves with humans. They don't. They own companies that produce clone blood and don't eat people. So even though they're vampires in this movie, they're very more portrayed as the good guys in this battle, where they're pretty much have like a "don't fuck with us, you know, we won't fuck with the humans" attitude. You know, but apparently Victor would like still liked a little bit of some stuff fresh from the tap and would occasionally go out and, you know, eat somebody. So it was actually him who wiped out everyone and then turns Selena and kind of adopted her as his daughter, and, you know, used her hatred as a weapon. So I said, dude was kind of a dick.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you know, at first the way Victor's portrayed, I generally was like, yeah, come on. You know, I thought Victor would be the guy to come in and save the day, but no, not at all.
Yep. He's like a conniving dude, and he's also slightly racist against werewolves.
More than slightly.
Yeah, because even after he finds out that his right-hand man that he had put in charge before he went to sleep, Craven, was plotting against him, you know, he's like, you know, still, he's like, you know, I'll forgive you for what you've done, Selena, but you got to go kill your boyfriend. And she just, yeah, once she finds out the truth, she's like, nope, I'm going to cut Victor's head off and...
Yeah,
run off with Michael.
And I think that's probably one of the most iconic scenes from this movie is, you know, all of the blood flow, and there's that pattern inside the chamber where, you know, Victor's at, on all the blood like runs through all those little grooves and everything else. And that's always the thing that stands out in my head when I think about Underworld for some reason. Like, just so much of the gothic architecture and everything else was just...
And, like, the whole house, like, the interior of this mansion they live in is, like, the walls, the furniture, everything's just painted black. I mean, it was the darkest movie.
I mean,
was like, I'll decorate my house this way. This is pretty sweet.
When you don't want light to reflect.
I mean, they even have flowers in flower pots that are black flowers. I mean, it's like everything is black.
It's like the black roses that grew in Antarctica or somewhere. Yeah. Like,
but yeah, it was cool, like, how... I mean, the whole coffin thing, too, because when the head, the ancient vampires, you know, hibernate or whatever, they basically kind of, like, dry out and stuff, and so they have to reintroduce blood to him, and they slowly, you know, he starts off just kind of, like, you know, looking like the mummy, and as he consumes, he eventually, you know, gets more human-looking, but yeah, that whole little coffin thing, tomb they had him in with, like, the blood running everywhere, I mean, that was, visually, this movie was, you know, fairly awesome.
I mean, that's, like I said, you know, I don't know, the visuals there are really, I think, what attracted. And then, you know, just a lot of the action and everything. I mean, you know, the storyline was there, but, you know, I don't think it really evolved and became story-driven until later in the series.
Yeah, with the the effects, like I said, the action sequences, especially in that first, I mean, the one iconic scene that I always remember is where she's kind of trapped in a hallway and she's outnumbered by Lycans and she just shoots holes in the flooring and like cuts a hole and like falls through the next floor. That's like something you'd see in like a comic book or a freaking video game. I mean, it was not something I think I'd ever seen done in a movie up until that point. And even like I said, the Lycans had UV bullets, the vampires had liquid silver bullets, and like so like this the sequences when people would get shot and like catch on fire. I mean, it was you know, very much like, you know, the Blade effects, but you know, just, you know, slightly, you know, its own style.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, like I said, the first film, as far as the effects and everything go, I felt were done a lot better than some of the later films. Yeah. Like
this one here, they don't really play up the whole love aspect until like toward the very end of the movie, when it's almost like where it's like, you know, those two are kind of on their own. They start kind of having feelings for it. But before that, it's more about almost like a political thriller or a mystery movie with vampires, like, you know, her trying to figure out what all is going on, like almost like a detective story.
Yes.
Where, you know, and at the end, like I said, they've gone so lightly on that whole love story aspect. You're like, I don't know if she killed Victor to protect him or just because Victor was an asshole.
I don't know. This movie, I would say it was because he was an asshole. Later on, I would say it was because of Michael.
Yeah. Because, like I said, as we, you know, move on, and I don't know, before we move on to the next one, you have a particular favorite part of this first movie?
No, I mean, just kind of what I hinted on before. Like, you know, yours, you know, was the whole, you know, shooting a hole in the ground, falling through. You know, mine was just, you know, that whole scene where the blood is running through all the little channels and everything. And, you know, so intricate of a pattern and stuff. I mean, that's the one thing that, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of bloodshed in this movie, so I guess that's why it was a fitting scene for me.
Yeah, I mean, all the blood and stuff, too, is very... Because everything in the movie is, like, just dark, either black, gray, or some variation. And then you have the brightness of the blood. And just really stood out against, like I said, all the darkness in the movie, which was kind of a cool, you know, visual...
Whatever. Yeah, and I don't know, you know? I mean, it almost reminded me... I think back to Sin City a little bit, you know, and how, you know, color plays... You know, a lot in that noir era style of, you know, artistry that was used, and
that you know rarely see a lot of werewolves in a movie. Like, even like up until this point, like I said, seen stuff like American Werewolf in London and some of that, where there's a couple of werewolves. I mean, but here you had like entire packs of these bastards running around.
Well, and I mean, I figure, you know, with the werewolf movie and everything, I mean, I would anticipate, you know, a pack mentality or something like that. Like, you know, it's always kind of been weird to me that there's just been one. Like, no, there would be a lot more than one.
Yeah, because, I mean, these guys are, you know, normally they're portrayed as just kind of like mindless beasts. But, you know, the werewolves were, you know, fairly organized. You know, they used guns and stuff. I think there's even like a...
I think they were a lot more organized in, like, human form, but, you know, once they actually turned and the primal instinct kicked in, then it was more like, all odds are off.
Yeah, it's like when Bruce Banner goes Hulk. It's like, now it's just time to rip shit up.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, probably best just to avoid it.
Well, it's like there's, a line in one of the later movies where Selena is, like, teaching a new generation of death dealers, and she's like, you know... The werewolf is most vulnerable in his wolf form. And they're like, what? Because, you know, they're stronger, faster. Like, he's like, yeah. But they can't use weapons when they're in wolf form. So you have the advantage at that point because you can just shoot the piss out of them.
You know, and that was the other thing that I think I really liked about this movie was the weapons technology and how refined and specialized everything was. And, I mean, just super advanced, you know. Like... I would have expected a much more advanced, like, delivery system, not just everybody running around with freaking Uzis, but, you know.
Yeah, because, like, you know, when they first discovered those UV rounds, they're like, how the hell did they come up with these? Because, you know, the werewolves are the, you know, the lycans are pretty much, you know, just beasts nearly. They're like, I didn't know they had that many scientists running around, and we'll find out the reason behind that when we get to the second movie, which came out 3 years later, 2006, Underworld's Evolution, which is was rare in a sequel that it really takes place like minutes after the last movie. I mean, is this one is really, you know, really is a continuation of that first movie's story. I mean, there's no like time jump. I mean, they're literally like, the movie starts off with Selena and Michael, you know, fleeing because now the, you know, that they've killed Victor, that, you know, they're on everybody's wanted list, the lycans and the werewolves.
Yeah, I was super stoked, you know, for this movie to come out.
I mean, because lycans and the vampires. So lycans and werewolves, same fucking thing.
You know, because I liked the first one so much. But then that was the weird thing. It's like I've waited 3 years and, you know, like you said, literally we're picking up right as the other story left off. And like after a 3 year gap, it's like, all right, I definitely should have went back and refreshed the memory bank.
Yeah. And if like there was a scene in the first movie where, you know, to prove, because, you know, Victor doesn't automatically believe Selena's story that Corvin is, or not, what's Corvin, freaking, what's his name?
Who are you talking about? Marcus Victor?
No, the one that was working for the lycans. Craven.
Craven.
So she goes and captures one of the werewolves that was kind of like their head scientist guy that was researching this whole blood thing and brings him to Victor, and Victor feeds on him because apparently when a vampire drinks your blood, they see your memories, and that kind of, so he rips this dude's throat out and ends up, yeah, so the guy bleeds all over the floor. Well, him bleeding out end up waking Michael, so, or not Michael, Marcus, who is one of the other three, the last of the three vampire elders, because Amelia got killed, Victor got killed, but this guy is like, you know, you think Victor's in charge, but apparently he was like the first known vampire. And he was kind of a, you know, he basically, you know, him and his brother were kind of warring, you know, and he kind of wanted to save his brother because, I mean, they're brothers. His brother was like a mindless beast, though. He wasn't the evolved werewolf of today.
There wasn't anything left to save. Ultimately.
No, he was just, so he turned Victor because Victor was a rich landowner and had his own army and stuff to use to try to capture his brother, and, you know, Victor kind of used that against him. You know, he captured his brother and somehow hid him away, which we find out the guy who built the prison was Selena's father, which was the real reason Victor decided to eat everybody, so Marcus could never find his brother.
Yep.
So, like, when he wakes up and finds out what all has happened, he just pretty much wastes their entire coven and goes hunting Selena because he thinks she's the one person that knows, fully aware of how she knows, like, will know how to find where his brother is hidden.
Yeah. And I gotta say, like, I really enjoyed kind of the start of this film, how it really shows, you know, the old, you know, I mean, you know, here in 1202, like, I love how these films really kind of flash back to a lot of the origins, and, you know, nobody's running around with knives or anything. Now it's very, you know, medieval-esque. And
yeah,
that was always a cool dynamic because, you know, a lot of times when I think vampires and stuff like that, I mean, that's really what I flash back to is the origin of vampires, not necessarily, you know, what we've seen, you know, with, you know, Dracula 2000 or Twilight or, you know, any of these other, you know, vampire flicks that are very modern and everything.
Yeah, that too. And, you know, Marcus is from an earlier time too, because he's been asleep for, because if it's his turn, it was his turn to be awakened, and each vampire gets 1,000 years, he's been asleep for at least 2,000 years. And like I said, he is more like the vampires that we've been dealing with, Selena's people have evolved, and they're basically just like, you know, human businessmen or whatever, but he's still like, I mean, he's still like, you know, full on, like, just a monster. Like, I mean, he actually has like bat wings and everything else. And when he first wakes up, he is just like, you know, this hideous, nasty beast. And like, and having him, because like I said, once Michael turned into the hybrid, he was kind of like the big bad. And, you know, having him first show up and them two like going at it, I mean, they're, all right, there's finally someone on his level to fight. Which those are some badass fights, especially like when they're on the back of the dump truck or whatever that they had stolen, and those two are fighting each other on the back, and it's like, I was like, that's a pretty, was a pretty badass sequence.
Yeah, when, you know, he first awakens and, you know, you, like, you know, that was the other thing is you, you often, you know, is, all right, your origin is you're bitten from a bat or whatever like that. But that was the only time, like, you know, you really saw the vampire with a bat-like essence. Yeah. And
because he was literally like the first vampire, you know, from, like I said, the original line. So he's, you know, pretty much the most powerful because he has the purest
bloodline,
which, you know, that bloodline goes through, you know, and is eventually had made it to Michael. But yeah, there's one thing, like, I forgot most of this movie going back and watching. I think I like fell asleep the first couple times I watched this because I always remember when the old guy shows up in the ship and you're like, who the hell is this guy? And turns out, you know, there's always been this legend of, you know, the original guy, Alexander Corvinus, who gave birth to the Lycans and the vampires. But apparently, you know, he's not dead. He's been, like I said, he's pretty much an immortal himself and just kind of has his own crew of guys. And he's like, yeah, basically, I've been cleaning up after these two idiots like all their lives. And so, like I said, I've been keeping, you know, the war from spilling over into the human world and keeping, trying to keep all of us like a secret. So he's just kind of been this like secret protector of, you know, of both the origins, monsters. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's, you know, I don't know. You know, I mean, one of the big characters here that, you know, really plays a pivotal role is, you know, Tanis, you know, because Tanis is helping both, you know, Michael and Selena, you know, so she's got, you know, pretty much all that knowledge and everything else, and ultimately, you know, that's how Marcus figures out where, you know, Selena and Michael's location is by killing her, and oh, truth be told.
Yeah, because, you know, he's like the vampire historian and really knows what all's been going on, and he had been banished, and, like, Selena's the one that banished him to some, like, abandoned monastery, but dude's been living like a pimp. He's got, like, werewolf bodyguards and got two hot vampire, quote, servants that he just kind of hangs out. And you also find out he's, you know, since he is kind of like the historian and that he's the one who's been making the UV rounds for the werewolves. So he's like, because he's kind of pissed off at Victor too, but he's like, yeah, make a little money. He's kind of like the weird vampire weapons dealer, you know? Yeah. He's just like, whoever has the biggest check, I'll work for you. I don't have any loyalties anymore.
Yeah, and that was kind of the crazy thing, you know, when Selena and Michael show up, you know, to his, you know, freaking hideaway and, you know, they go into the armory. And that was always kind of the iconic. And I'm like, there are a lot of cool toys.
Yeah. Those Walther P99s and the Agent K Tactical. Yeah, I mean, they always had some cool guns in these movies. You know, for a gun nerd, these movies always had, like, some badass weaponry.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's, I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things that really, you know, stuck out in my head. It's like, dude's a pimp and he's got a badass gun collection. I need to go have a beer with that guy.
Yeah. And, you know, eventually, you know, he sends them to meet Corvinus. And, you know, he kind of tells them the whole story about what happened and how they hid all this away. And, you know, but of course, Marcus shows, you know, follows them there and ends up, you know, wiping out a lot of his people and wounding or almost killing Michael. But, you know, apparently he's, you know, can heal himself eventually. But, you know, as kind of a parting gift, he gives, you know, lets Selena have his blood, which makes her a badass. So like, and at that point, she becomes, pretty much becomes Blade, because she's like, now she's, yes, a Daywalker.
Yeah, and that, you know, that was a pivotal moment for me. Like, that, I mean, that's such a game changer. And I mean, that whole thing carries on, because nobody really knows what powers she possesses or anything like that. They know that there's something different. You know, but it's like, you know, especially in the later films where, you know, they're blasting through walls and UV light and shit. And it's like, haha, you're trapped now, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, wait, never mind. You can walk in daylight. Fuck. You're not one that's going to burn to ash.
Yeah. And like, the first is too, there's not really any kind of, you know, they don't, there's like, you know, take this, it'll help you. But they never really explain what has happened to Selena yet. And then when she kind of goes, now that she remembers kind of everything about where, you know, where the werewolf is hidden. You know, she kind of takes Corvinus as his old, like, almost like SEAL Team 6 of of guys that he sends with her to try to stop him from awakening the werewolf, and, you know, bad fight scenes and like, that's one thing they say too, is like, these original werewolves were, they did not turn back in human. They, when they turned, they like were just straight beasts. So, you know, as he starts, you know, eating the team, they start coming back as werewolves. So now she's like fighting all these dudes, and, you know, luckily Michael wakes up enough to help her. So then he's got his own fight scene with the original werewolf. And while Selena's trying to take down Marcus, now that she's all like, you know, swole up and badass. And yeah, I gotta say, one of the coolest fights is, because like I said, the guys had rappelled in on, like, from the helicopter. Well, freaking Marcus grabs a rope and jerks the helicopter through the roof, so there's like just a helicopter sitting there, blade spinning, and they're fighting on this bridge, and she finally just like cuts his arm off and blasts him in the face and kicks him into the damn helicopter blades, which, always a badass way to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the big scene that stands out is actually where, you know, kind of the helicopter scene, but, you know, where Michael actually wakes up and then, you know, grabs William and, you know, rips his head off. Like,
yeah.
That was just like, oh, damn.
Just like, his tears, literally tears him a new one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
And then, like I said, at that time, we kind of, you notice she's stronger and faster and can actually stand up to Marcus now, where before she just got pimp slapped around. But then also the sun comes up as this battle's ending, and now that the ceiling has been caved in, you're like, oh shit, sunlight. And Selena's like, oh, sweet.
I'm not burning. Yes.
I'm not on flame. Yes. That's really the only time vampires sparkle in these movies, is when they catch on fire.
But even then, it's not a sparkle. It's an actual, oh, you're burning to ash, which is much more fitting. Like, The whole sparkling of the vampires is what I blame on the emo movement.
Yeah. Yeah, because they start, and they had that scene in the beginning when they're fleeing from Marcus, and the sun comes up, and they've got no cover, and they, you know, and she's like starting to flame up, you know, and they have to like drive into some factory and stuff, and he hides her in a box and basically paints all the windows and so it's like really how vulnerable vampires are. You know, they're badasses when the sun's down, but during the daylight, you know, a mirror can take them out. You just reflect a little light beam on their ass.
They'll never see it coming. You know, vampires don't cast a reflection. Uh-huh. A little vampire inside joke there. Yeah, that was horrible.
All right, Count Chocula.
I should not quit my day job.
And like I said, between this movie and the next movie, there was a prequel, Rise of the Lycans, which went back and told the story of, you know, was it Lucius and how this whole war started. But, you know, it really, yeah, like I said, it wasn't the best. And you could pretty much, if you just watch the first 20 minutes of Underworld, they told that whole story in a quick flashback. So it,
and that's one of the things I got to say that I liked about the Underworld movies, is they would always kind of give you, you know, a little bit of that flashback of some of the pivotal moments. And
yeah,
this is how we got to where we are now.
Because one thing, like I said, I apparently missed this third movie. So when I went to watch Blood Wars, you know, they had that little segment at the start, like, hey, this is what's happened so far. And I'm like, all right, I remember three quarters of that. I must have missed a movie somewhere.
She's got a kid? What?
Yeah. So, yeah, when I eventually got around to watching the third movie, I was like, oh, okay, now this makes a little bit more sense. Yeah, 2012's Underworld Awakening, which was like a big jump, like from 2006 to 2012, so we've not seen these characters in a long time. And basically, I like the way this movie did, because there's like, you know, as Alexander had said, that he had been protecting the world from this war and keeping it from spilling out. So after he is gone and there's nobody, no one, you know, kind of keeping the secret, the world finds out about werewolves and vampires. And of course, you know, the humans decide to hunt everybody down.
We got to get this power.
Yeah. And then, you know, they're calling like the Great Purge or whatever. And this one was actually directed by Manus Marland. Someone different than the previous directors. And this starts off with Michael and, you know, Selena getting captured. And basically she wakes up in a lab 12 years later. And, you know, like I said, at this point, you know,
cryogenics, man, they're a hell of a thing.
So yeah, we get this whole time jump into like a future where, you know, vampires and werewolves are hunted and the humans are really in control of anything, or at least we think they're the humans. And this weird science, you know, lab is doing experiments on them, trying to come up with what they claim is a vaccine. And, you know, werewolves are pretty much, as far as you know, are all but wiped out. Vampires are living underground, you know, hidden and whatnot. But turns out it ain't humans that are running the lab. It's secret vampires doing some, or secret werewolves doing some science shit.
Yes, science. So what do you got on tap for science this week?
Werewolf shit.
Yeah.
You need to use the blood from a Corvinus to make werewolf steroids, which is pretty much what to try to make them immune to silver and also super strong.
Which is weird. So given the skill set of the vampires and everything else, do you really think that the, you know, humans could decimate vampires in such droves that, you know, the battle between, you know, the lichens and the, like, I don't think humans could sway that much.
I don't know, because you got, you know, from what they say, like, the discovery of these monsters kind of brought the world together. So at this point, like, the world wasn't really divided. You know, it was like, as we've seen in, like, World War II and stuff, when countries all start getting along and saying we have a common enemy, there's, you know, humans can accomplish some amazing things. And, of course, and when your enemy is allergic to sunlight, you know, you just hunt them in the daytime, you're good to go.
I don't know. Find me a hideout. I think I'd go north. Ha! Foreshadowing. See what I did there?
Ha.
Shenanigans.
And, you know, this one also introduces some new characters. David and was it Thomas, I believe, was his father's name, which are kind of like the current leaders of the surviving coven. And, you know, they are trying to fight against the humans and the lichens. And David is trying, you know, knows Selena is this legendary death dealer and is trying to, like, you know, help us fight against. And his father is very, like, you know, complacent. He's like, no, we need
this. This is not our war, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to, you know, Thomas is like, you know, we need to, you know, stay underground and worry about our own survival. Like, we can't stand up against the humans and the lichens. But, you know, David's like, no, fuck that. We need to fight back or there's not going to be a future for us to have.
Yeah. Which is crazy. After all the centuries, it comes down to this.
Yeah. And of course, like I said, the way Selena has woke up is because another patient in the lab is tearing up shit and happens to release her. And she's so connected to this person that she gets visions of their sight. And she, of course, assumes it's Michael. So as she tracks it down, turns out it's Eve, a baby, or, well, at this point, a 12, 13-year-old vampire werewolf lichen that, you know, apparently Selena was pregnant when they were captured and never knew it because she's been frozen since then. But, you know, they had born this girl and had using her blood basically to make this, you know, lichen steroids.
Which is crazy because you think, like, cryogenics, like, I'd almost feel like that would shut everything down. Like, but I don't know. I guess not.
Which is funny is the guy who plays the head doctor, who we eventually find out is, you know, that you think is trying to wipe out everyone, is actually an undercover lichen. Dr. Jacob is played by Stephen Ray, the guy from a movie we talked about recently, V's from Vendetta. He was the cop.
Always good to see familiar faces.
And the one thing, there's another guy in here when I saw him, it cracked me up. Quint, who is the son of Dr. Jacob, and like I said, the one super lichen that he's been using this weird cocktail he's made from their blood, is an actor named Chris Holden Reed, who, if you've ever watched that TV show on Sci-Fi about the I think it's like Good I can't remember it's but she plays it's all about, you know, fairies and werewolves and all that stuff. But he plays a werewolf on that show. So I'm like, typecasting. Bro's always playing a werewolf.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of fitting. I mean, once a werewolf, always a werewolf.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, some of the fights with him, though, are just bad. Because like I said, when Selene gets rescued, David takes her back to their hidden coven, and they start getting attacked, and you hear explosions and stuff, and you think it's, oh, shit, the humans have found them. Well, no, Thomas, like, you know, ratted them out and was like, hey, get this girl the hell out of here, and, like, you know, kind of makes an agreement with the Lycans, so the Lycans all invade, but David's like, no, we're going to fight back, you know, fuck you, Dad. And they, you know, pull out all their guns, and so, which I like, they had, all their guns were hidden in this big-ass chandelier. I was like, I need that chandelier in my house. Yes. But yeah, Selena's like...
There was definitely some tactical moments.
Yeah. So yeah, Selena's like jacking up all these werewolves and stuff, and all of a sudden this like big bastard comes in, and it's like just a huge like werewolf, and you know, he's instantly heals himself, and is like just the baddest mofo. But the final fight scene when she's like, when they, you know, she goes back to Antigen to try to rescue her daughter, and you know, eventually finds Michael still frozen, but it's one of those like, I gotta save the girl or I gotta save him, so you know, sorry bro, I gotta go with her. And that final fight scene between him and her where she finally just like busts him in the stomach and he's like, I heal instantly. And she's like, yeah, that's what I was hoping for, and like throws the pin from the grenade she had just shoved inside him. He's like, oh shit.
Oh, bad time.
Yeah, yes. Try to heal from that, jackass.
Yeah. such awesomeness.
And also Michael or Ely or Early as Detective Sebastian, which is a human that was actually married to a girl who was a nurse who had got bitten, became a vampire, you know, and eventually his wife was taken out in the purge, so he secretly is trying to help the vampires and stuff where he can, because he thinks this whole purge thing is bullshit too. And that's one thing, like, once we get into the, you know, and from this point on, spoiler alert, because we are going to talk about the new movie, Underworld Blood Wars, which it kind of jumps ahead again for a little bit. And at this point, Selene's, the werewolves and the vampires are both trying to hunt her daughter because they think her blood is like
the key.
Like I said, the werewolves want it to make more of the serum that made, you know, the couple of super guys, and you know, the vampires are actually hunting her because, like I said, at this point, with the whole things of the secret project they were working on, they've made a big comeback, and at this point, you know, it's the vampires that are almost hunted into extinction, because the, you know, the Lycans are now organized and functioning more, you know, as an army instead of just a bunch of wild beasts. But we start off with her, she's like, well, I sent my daughter away and told the people who hid her to
never tell me where she is,
so I would not be able to give away the secret. So when I went back and watched the third one, I expected, like, the whole time with that detective, I'm like, oh, at the end of it, she's going to send her off with the detective. But like I said, we missed that part of the story. So I don't know if that little mini series or whatever kind of explained that that part of the story. So it just kind of jumps to like, oh no, this is a thing that happened.
Yeah.
But then of course David shows up again, and it's like, hey. Yeah, even though you've been like a death warrant on your head for killing all these, you know, vampire elders, it's got to the point where we need your help, since you are the, you know, last original death dealer. We need you to come in and like basically be like the drill sergeant and train the new death dealers to deal, because like we're gonna get wiped out if we don't have someone who knows what the fuck they're doing. Yep. Teaching these kids.
Yeah, no, that was kind of the, you know, the thing about this is, you know, this film was very, you know, really about the hierarchy, and probably one of the most political of the films, you know, as far as, you know, the struggle for control, as far as the council and everything else.
Yeah, because there's a whole, like, new, you know, vampire council, and Samira, who is the council of the East Coven, she's the one that's, like, you know, gets Thomas to come in, because now Thomas kind of, because... Yeah, I forgot to mention this in the last one. It went, you know, during that big battle, David is killed, but Selena uses her blood to heal him. So now, you know, he's like, all right, we're good. So he comes in, you know, and Selena, you know, talks him into like convincing the rest of the council that we can, you know, trust Selena now. But it didn't all turns out to be bullshit, because she's really, like, you know, wants Selena's blood to make herself a Daywalker and become the new head vampire queen. So as soon as Selena comes in and starts training everybody, oh, she frames her and kills all the death dealers and be like, oh, it was Selena. We got to hunt her down. And is, you know, draining her blood to try to, you know, make herself a new superpower vampire.
Yeah, and, you know, she is probably one of the most, you know, manipulative of, you know, the vampires. Like,
oh, yeah.
Her little, you know, slave boy toy thing. That whole scene was just, you know, rather interesting. I mean, you didn't, you know, get a lot of, you know, emphasis, you know, in any of the other films. But on this one, it's like, I, you know, I want to help. And it's like, well, you can be of use to me other ways.
Oh, yeah. She's like just, you know, she's like, you know, kind of going over her plots and plans. And he starts offering his opinion. She's like, you know, if you really want to use your mouth, there's other ways you can serve me. And it's like, pfft, go down, homie. Yeah. And, but like, you know, there's also Alexia, who is like the kind of the mole. She's the new head of the vampires or werewolves is a guy named Marius. And she's actually secretly lovers with Marius and giving him all this information on the vampires. But even that was part of a Samira's plan. You know, she's like knew the whole time that, you know, she was giving him information. So when Thomas and David end up rescuing Selena, Thomas is killed. It's like, go to the north. So they head off to the coven, the Nordic coven, which is, they basically say they're vampire hippies because, you know,
it's like, we're vampires, but we claim peace.
And yeah. They're just up there, you know, in some monastery looking thing with white, and they, you know, they're at the wall with the White Walkers.
And this is
going
where,
on spirit quests and stuff to the spirit world.
Yeah, and this is where Underworld meets Game of Thrones. With their own Khaleesi and...
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like where the Eastern Covenant is all modernized. These guys are still like old school medieval, you know, with swords and like, you know, like I said, very Game of Thrones up there. And of course, they send the Lycan, tell the Lycans where she's at. And so they attack the coven and finally are convinced that, because their whole plan is like, we're going to take out the rest of the vampires. Before we do that, we need Eve's blood to make us all super werewolves. But when they finally track her down and they're like, oh shit, she really doesn't know anything. Well, fuck it. Let's go kill everybody.
Yeah,
anyway.
We're going to kill anybody everywhere anyway, you know?
But yeah, during this whole thing, I like how it tied it back to the original movie, because once they, you know, the leader of that coven was friends with Thomas, and he's like, you know, your mother, your father, you know, made this, and I've been keeping it for you. And it was like this badass silver sword. And he's like, you know, he's like, okay. He's like, yeah, cause you're the true heir to the coven. He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, your mother was, you know, one of the three original or the three, you know, ancient vampires. What is it?
Hold on, it'll come.
Amelia.
Yeah, Amelia.
The vampire that was wiped out in the first one by Lucius's men. So yeah, he, you know, finds out that, oh, like, you know, but basically he's like, you know, she denied you to protect you so you wouldn't get caught up in all this freaking scheming and whatnot, and people wouldn't try to hunt you, you know, if something happened to me.
You know, and that was kind of another, you know, huge turning point in this film, because he's told that, and he's like, yeah, you know, bullshit. She just abandoned me, you know, because she wanted her, you know, power and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, here, you know,
yeah,
maybe this will change her mind. And, you know, it was a single drop of her blood. And
so he could have all her memories. And also, you know, to prove his story, she had also left, like, vials of blood for all the, you know, whoever
the
council
existing
members.
Council, were, yeah.
Members. So, you know, he, after, you know, you think Selena's dead, you know, because she gets torn up by Martius, but, you know, of course the weird voodoo vampires wrap her up and send her to the spirit world. Well, he goes back to defend the coven from the oncoming attack. So when he goes up, he shows up and he's like, I'm the true leader. Yeah, I did like how Samir's like, you know, boy toy was like, you know, pulls a sword on her, or pulls a gun on her. He's like, you swore to protect me. He's like, no, actually I swore to protect, you know, the leader of this house. So that ain't you anymore, bitch.
Yes. Yeah, his coming of, you know, age moment was pretty awesome. And I gotta say, dude, like, it's really weird that, you know, when they put her in the prison cell.
Well, it wasn't a prison cell. It was, like, her room, basically. Yeah. They took her back to her room kind of as a, but, you know, girls got swords everywhere, you know.
It's like, I think I would have found a more secure place.
Yeah. Put her
with
in the cage
less
in the basement.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, the you know, the werewolf's plan too when they get in, when they raid the, you know, raid the house, and you know, they do it during daylight, and they bring in a freaking grenade launcher and start blowing out all the windows, so the sun's coming in and just frying all the vampires. Like, that is a pretty genius level plan there.
Well, I mean, I think after, you know, the previous, what, four films, that, oh yeah, we're not going to win in hand-to-hand combat. Like, you know, we're going to get decimated, so what can we do? You know, let's level the playing field and, you know, hit them where it hurts. And, you know, that was really kind of awesome, you know, watching, you know, that whole battle, you know, play out. And
yeah, I mean, it's an epic battle, but it's all, like, close quarters, so they're all pretty much fighting in the lobby of the mansion.
You've got the foyer and you've got the staircase.
Yeah,
and there's your battlefield.
And then right as homeboy's about to lose the battle, you know, he's the only daywalker, so the sun's not bothering him, and he's severely outnumbered, because you know the other guys, you know, they're doing their best, but they're like, yeah, we can't come in the sunlight, bro. We'll shoot him from over here in the corner, but you're kind of on your own. But then Selena shows back up, because going to the spirit world, you know, healed her, and now she has, like, freaking ghost powers and shit and can, like, move really fast. So she just shows up and starts fucking everybody up.
Yeah, no, that was awesome after, you know, she came back. And, I mean, that was kind of an interesting, you know, take on the whole, you know, deprivation chamber aspect of things, yeah. You know, where it's like, you know, it's not just so much the water, but, like, all of a sudden you're now in this cocoon-like thing and the stasis, if you will. So it was really interesting.
Yeah, because they go with the old... And, of course, when she shows up, she brings the Coven of the North to help with the battle. And so now you got the new school vampires with the Game of Thrones vampires. And the fight scene previous to that where David goes to... confront Samir, and she has finally taken Selena's blood while they're in this fight, and she finally, like, you know, steps in the sunlight. She's like, oh my god, it worked, I'm a daywalker, and then he rams her sword his sword through her head. So it's like, yeah, that worked for about 2 seconds, bitch. Oh. But yeah, then the fight scene with Selena and Marcius, where they're fighting, and in the old training ground, and some blood splashes into her mouth, so she starts getting visions. At this point, too, like, not only has she lost her daughter, she can't find Michael, because, you know, like, he woke up by the time they had gone back to find him in the lab, but she had never been able to track him down. So she gets, like, a brief glimpse of him, and that's pretty much how Marcius has become, like, this uber werewolf, as he's been feeding off of Michael. And so she finally, gets some more blood from him, and finds out that, oh, he actually killed him and drained his blood. And he's like, yeah, you know, this is the last vial of his blood, and just drinks it in front of her, like, ha ha, you'll never get any of it. And she goes like full rage vampire at that point, and, like, rips the dude's spine out.
Yes, that was freaking awesome. Like, you know, you hadn't seen, you know, that level of brutality. Like, I mean,
no.
Like, that was some straight up Mortal Kombat shit.
Yeah, that looked like a straight
standing there with fatality. Like, the freaking spine in the rib cage, just like, what now, motherfucker?
yeah, try to heal that. And then, of course, you know, David walks back out to the battle holding his head, and all the werewolves like, yeah, we're probably fucked now, we should leave.
Yeah, he's like, I've killed your leader, take your wounded and leave, you know?
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty honorable. I mean, I gotta say, yeah, you know, given that circumstance, I think I would have probably just tried to wipe everybody out. I wouldn't have, you know, been like, hey, you know, go tuck your tail, retreat, take your wounded, and, you know, we'll see you again. And, oh, what do you think, another 4 years when we get our next Underworld movie, if the pattern continues?
Yeah, maybe, because, like I said, you know, I really thought this would be the last of the movies. But, you know, we end, and if it is the last of the movies, we kind of ended in a good place where, you know, most of the council is wiped out in this battle. So now Selena went from being the outlaw to one of the council members. There's, I can't remember his name, but he's like one of the last surviving council members, and then David is like the head of the Eastern Covenant, and Selena pretty much takes over the Northern Covenant. And, like, so you get her meditating in the snow, very, very Game of Thrones, and finally her daughter comes, like, walking up out of the snow, like, you know. So he's pretty much, you know, because, like, one of the psychic vampires is like, you know, hey, you know, I can kind of see your future, and, you know, you will eventually be reunited after many battles and whatnot. So she's like, all right, cool, I'm just going to go chill in the north and let her find me. And you know, I said, everyone kind of is at a good place, at least at the end, if they do stopped the series. You know, we kind of got a cool, somewhat happy ending.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's so much dynamic to the character of Eve, though, that hasn't been tapped. Like, I almost, like, wonder if, you know, Selena's legacy, you know, can somehow be carried over, you know, through Eve, you know?
Yeah, or I mean, we get another, like, spinoff movie where we see where Eve's been, like, these last years and stuff, you know, out on her own, having her own adventures. And because, I mean, that's a whole big missing chunk of the story that they could explore at some point.
I mean, because, I mean, she's going to be the next, you know, purist. So, I don't, you know, I mean, there's just so much there on tap that...
Yeah, we get another underworld.
We've almost got to do something with it.
Where Eve is now the head head of the clan. As with most movies, you know, that we keep, you know, spinning stuff off to the next generation instead of rebooting stuff. So, I mean, maybe Eve will get her own movie someday.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, you know. I mean, I just think that there's definitely some potential there. And, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I mean, to just sit there and reboot with, you know, or remake with the same characters and everything. Like, yeah, they're vampires. But at the same time, like, you know, put Selena in a council position or something like that, and now, you know,
yeah, Eve's the head death dealer.
It's Eve trying to bridge, you know, some of the gaps. And, you know, maybe it isn't, you know, as, you know, vampires versus lycans, more so than it is, you know, each trying to pick up the pieces and, you know, be like, hey, maybe we can finally put this war to rest or something. I don't know.
Yeah, because you never really see anything about, you know, with this movie, you know, other than the storyline of Eve, there's not a whole mention of, like, the human purge and war and such. You know, so don't really know if they've kind of come to peace with the humans or what, because they never really discuss that aspect of the war at this point.
So, I don't know. I mean, they're, like you said, you know, if they decide to close it and put a wrap on it, all right, I'm in a happy place. But I just think that there's, you know, some additional potential that can be, you know, utilized.
So, like, you know, as you said, going back and rewatching these and watching the new ones, some of the older stuff doesn't hold up as well.
No, as I mean, I remember the first film, 2003, you know, I thought was awesome. Going back and watching Underworld Evolution, like, some of the effects and stuff like that just weren't up to par. Like, I mean, you know, there were, comparing to the first, I was like, wow, it's almost like, you know, the franchise took a step backwards, you know, in the effects department. You know, it's almost like they tried to do too much, you know, CGI and that type of thing. And that almost, like, it was almost a distraction for me going back and watching it.
That, and like I said, the second one, like I said, the first one holds up. I still love that. Could have been it if they never made any movies that other than that one could have been a good ending point. But yeah, the second one, and there's like I said, there's a whole lot more of the love aspect in the second one. And there's also, to me anyway, it seemed like there's a lot less action. Like, there's a few big fights at the beginning of the movie and the big battles toward the end of the movie, but there's a lot of them just, like, you know, wandering around trying to solve whatever this mystery of the necklace, and
it's a vampire detective drama.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, it's yeah, and trying to uncover the secrets of the past. So yeah, it kind of got slow for me, like in the middle piece. You know, the third one I thought came back strong. It wasn't the same old rehashing as, like, the second one kind of was. It was, you know, at least a new story, or a new, and a lot more action oriented than the previous version.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that was the thing, you know, for me about Underworld was, you know, the action, the gunplay, the, you know, just the dynamics there. And that to me kind of was lost in the second film, came back a little bit in the third. And then, you know, by the time we got to the fourth and fifth film, I'm re-bought in again.
Yeah, like I said, this new one, and I do like how, you know, there is the risk of, oh, David's now the new love interest. But they never really get into that in Blow Away. It's almost like a brother-sister relationship. You know, he even says at one point, like, she's like, why are you still following me? He's like, hey, you're family, and family's got to stick together. You know, you say, yeah, I owe you my life. I consider you my family now because, you know, we share blood.
Can we say friend-zoned?
Yeah. I think he would hit that if he was allowed, but yeah, it's like, but no, it's more of a brother sister type type deal. you know, respected warriors and whatnot.
Yes. I mean, I don't know, you know. I just curious to see what the future holds. I just hate that there's, you know, such a big gap, because it's like each time there is, like, thank God there's that, you know, 5-6 minute, you know, recap of, you know, the previous story arc. Otherwise, like, I would feel like I was restarting the franchise over and over again.
Yeah, because I did not realize I had missed that third movie until I saw the fourth one. I was like, the fuck's going on here? But at least they gave me enough of a backstory that I wasn't super lost. Yeah. I could kind of interpret what I had missed until I had a chance to go back and watch that third one. And there was big parts of the second one that I remember trying to watch it several times and falling asleep like somewhere in the middle. And just, like I said, especially that first and second movie look so similar that you get confused of like what happened where and when, because they're almost identical movies.
Yeah, it's real easy to get some of the story arcs and, you know, even though you had, you know, a core set of two or three characters, like all of the other, you know, building characters, it's a lot to take in and try to remember who's who and who's over what coven. And I'm like, damn, I feel like I'm trying to strategize a battle, like trying yeah. to, you know, be like, okay, this was the, you know, head grand, you know, person over, you know, this coven who was, you know, the father of this person. And
and I do like in the third movie, or in, you know, in Awakening, how they kind of showed the downfall of the vampires, because, you know, in the first one they're living in this big mansion and they're back there by the last movie, but in that second movie, you know, they're still a coven, they're still dressed up all nice and shit, but they're living in the sewers, basically, kind of like the werewolves were at the start of the first movie.
Dude, they were just trying to hook up with the Ninja Turtles.
That's what this movie needed, Ninja Turtles.
Fucking Ninja Turtles would have done work on some lichens, man.
That's the next movie. They find Ninja Turtles.
I mean, you know, a lichen is not that far of a stretch from, you know, Bebop and Rocksteady.
Yeah. I mean, they're pretty much were-turtles.
Exactly. You know? I mean.
So, as we wrap this up, any final thoughts that we're at on the cigar right now?
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, dude, that, you know, the initial punch of lighting this cigar was like, all right, you know, I'm gung-ho and everything. I got to say, by the time I got, you know, down to the halfway point, it started to mellow out some. You know, either that or it's dead in my taste buds so much that, you know.
It's still quite strong.
I mean, I would definitely say that this is, you know, a full cigar. I'm going to retract my medium full because it, you know, even though it has mellowed some, this is going to be, you know, more of a powerhouse than.
And it's a decent, or at least this Vitola of the 60, a decent length smoke, too, because, you know, here we're an hour in, and I've probably still got a good three inches or so of cigar left.
I mean, so we're going to end up having to give our final thoughts, you know, probably during. This will probably end up carrying us through news. I mean, this is, you know, going to be a solid, probably close to 2 hour smoke for us.
All right, and with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
It's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And we're back. It's Beer 30.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
So this week we're drinking Wild Heavens Ode to Mercy. This is the special Winter Ale edition. So, you know, each season, you know, Wild Heaven does kind of the Ode to Mercy coffee brown ale, but
well, that's I think the Ode to Mercy is like a regular thing, but they always do like a special version, and like I said, this is their special winter ale, which apparently was launched in 2010 and has been their like longest running seasonal beer.
Yeah, but this year, you know what they've done is basically they've, you know, added, you know, basically aged it on oak chips, and you know,
not just any oak chips, bourbon barreled oak chips.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's taking what was already a wonderful beer and taking it to a whole nother level, and this is just freaking awesome. I've loved everything I've ever had from, you know, Wild Heaven, and you know, this is just another home run. And you know, while we're kind of talking about home runs, you know, we gave them a little bit of a shout out on the last episode, but want to, you know, just mention Dawson Fine Wine and Spirits again, just, you know, for, you know, being able to bring, you know, certain limited edition runs of beers like this and, you know, getting it into markets that, you know, otherwise you may not have, you know, the chance to try these. You know, you can't just go to, this is such a limited production here that you can't just go anywhere and find it on tap or in the bottle. In fact, you know, Wild Heaven on their Wild Heaven's website, and we'll throw a link up to it, basically has a list of the locations where you can find it on tap or by the growler.
And this, you know, is, like I said, a limited edition seasonal, so grab it while you can.
Yeah, if supplies haven't already ran out by now. You know, we were just fortunate enough to get our hands on a bottle, and I just can't say enough. Wild Heaven just does not disappoint.
Yeah, and I've been a fan of brown ales. I mean, that's almost a good everyday drinking beer if you're, you know, not into the, you know, lighter pilsners and whatnot. But this, with that added bourbon flavor of the oak chips, definitely adds another level to the flavor of a brown ale. But, and also, this is an 8.2% beer, where your standard browns are a little bit lighter in alcohol content.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you're only looking at about 40 IBUs on this, so, you know, this is definitely going to be more, you know, for me, I'm tasting a lot more of the bourbon, the oak, and just the maltiness of the beer. I'm not getting any bitterness, and I mean, just all around awesome flavor. I feel like a fanboy, but, you know, damn, this is good. You know,
I can drink a brown ale year round, but this, like I said, this added alcohol content and the added, you know, bourbon taste to it. It definitely makes us a good winter beer while it's still, you know, cold outside, or now that it's cold again, because we had snow and then it was 70 and now it's back in the 50s. So it's still winterish enough that you could enjoy some good winter beers.
Welcome to Georgia.
Yeah. You know, like I think that's one of my favorite things on the net. It was like Mother Nature says, you can't have all five seasons in one, or four seasons in 1 week. And George's like, hold my beer.
Literally. So, yeah, I mean, just freaking awesome. So, you know, this right here is going to be available in your 750 milliliter bottles and draft only. You know, Wild Heaven does say no nitro on this one.
Yeah, because they did do a Old New Mercy nitro stout, too. Is one of their other seasonal or limited beers, which I've not tried that one yet. But that would be, you know, with the nitro, probably a little bit creamier.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, at some point you're going to ask me for a rating. I think it's obvious I'm at a solid 5 on this one.
Yeah, I think I'll go with you on that one. Yeah, this is a damn good beer. I may have to go see if I can find another one before they disappear.
Absolutely. So, you know, with that, we'll be back with science.
Going to say that like a question. Yes, we have science. Yeah, last week we had an interview. This week we actually have some science.
Okay, I got to make sure you're on the ball. I mean, yeah. You know. So, stay tuned.
Yes, science!
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for science. You ready to learn all there is to learn this week?
Yeah, man, I'm ready to drop some knowledge since, you know, I already knew how to smoke a cigar from the last episode, so that didn't really help me much anymore. So, you know, it's time you know, help educate me.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, I noticed that the new episode of Teach Me Something that we're supposed to be coming up this Friday. So, Yeah, if you enjoyed what we did last week, check out what they come up with for episode two. And with the, you ever like remember the Rocketeer?
Yeah.
You know, jetpacks have always been kind of the big thing in sci-fi and whatnot. Everyone's, you know, yeah, expected by now we all have our own personal jetpacks and could fly wherever. But, you know, the jetpack technology has not been, you know, that
practical. We're not all jet jaguars yet.
Yeah. But one of the things that has been a thing is the aquatic jetpacks. I've seen plenty of videos of, you know, people doing tricks and whatnot. And basically these things, you know, hook up to, like, say, something like the engine of a jet ski, and just use high-pressure hoses to fly above the water. And for the first time, someone has kind of come up with a practical application for these, and it's currently being tested in Dubai, what they're calling the Dolphin Firefighter System. If anyone knows anything about Dubai, it's like this huge, sprawling city that's kind of popped up in the desert. It's like probably one of the richest countries in the world, and they have such giant high-rises and big bridges over waters that they've had a problem recently with being able to get fire apparatus to fires that happen to be either out in the middle of like a long bridge, or anyone who's tried to drive down like 400 when there's an accident, you know what kind of a bitch it is to get anywhere on a road that's, you know, backed up in traffic. Well, the thing that they're it's not in like actual use yet, but they have done a demo video of what they're testing, and it looks like something out of freaking Baywatch, where basically a firefighter or firefighters roll up on jet skis and then use the jetpacks to fly up to a bridge where there is a vehicle fire and are able to put water on that fire directly from the jetpack apparatus and the, you know, available water they're hovering over.
Yeah, and, you know, and what we're quoting here is jetpacks in this article, but, you know, if from a, you know, standpoint, if you want to do something absolutely unique, I know there's companies, you know, here in fact, just, you know, a few miles up the road, you know, it's, most folks will call this a flyboard, and, you know, basically, you're just using that water pressure, and, you know, there's actually competitions, you know, and stuff like that held in Dubai where people are doing backflips and all kinds of aquatic tricks and everything else. I've seen
one video where someone basically turned one into one of the speeder bikes from Star Wars and was, like, racing that down a down a river.
So, you know, Lanier Flyboarding is, you know, one of the companies that come to mind, and, you know, it's like anything else. You know, you pay for, you know, your session of ever how long that you want to be out on the water and stuff. But, you know, definitely a unique and interesting experience.
Yeah, I'd like to – I don't know what the weight limit on those things are, but I would like to try it.
Dude, we'll just get one of the jet-powered boats and hook you to it.
Just increase the pressure.
I'm 30 feet above the water. I'm not supposed to be doing this.
This landing's going to suck.
I will say that high-pressure belly flops do suck.
But yeah, that's kind of a cool solution to a unique problem that they're having in Dubai. And, you know, this technology could, because, you know, they've also been discussing using actual jetpacks to maybe get in, fight some of these high-rise fires that they have. Because I've seen people use these things on land, too, as long as you have, like, a, you know, constant water source, like hooking up to a fire hydrant. You know, this could also be used, you know, on land to get fire personnel where they normally would have trouble getting to. Because these buildings are so freaking big that it's hard to get a ladder truck up that high.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's going to kind of be the thing. Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure that they can probably come up with some kind of, you know, industrialized version. I know that most of the time, you know, you're usually between, you know, 10 and 20 feet above the water on average. I mean, which most bridges, that would get you, you know, up enough to be able to service any fires or anything. But if you're on a, you know, freaking sky rise or something, then I don't know. Like, there needs to be some sort of a land version, but I don't quite know.
Well, they've also over in Dubai, they have those whatever plane suits now. So maybe that's some kind of technology that could be adapted to the same.
I don't know, dude. You know, if the folks from Fast and the Furious can go to Dubai and they can jump freaking Bugattis and shit across buildings into other buildings, I mean, the technology's there.
And speaking of new things, did you know your body has an undiscovered organ that we did not know about previously? It's recently the published in the Lancet Gastroenterology and Hepatology manual. They've officially named a new organ in the body. They call it the mesentery, which is actually mid-intestinal. And what it is basically they've just knew this thing was there, and it was basically thought it was just something that kept your intestines connected to your ab wall or whatnot and kept your intestines in place. And they all thought it was just, you know, part of the, like, just support structures, and we're not like a single unit. But, you know, recent advances in, you know, microscopic surgery and stuff, they've discovered that this, what they thought was just previously a support structure, is actually one single piece. All these pieces are connected. So they're officially now calling this a separate organ. At this point, you know, they don't really know what it, Calvin Coffey, professor of surgery at the University of Limerick, is one of the publishers of this study. And so far they don't know exactly what it does other than being like some kind of structural support. But like I said, you know, they're like the blood vessels and lymph nodes and stuff that are connected to your intestines run through this structure. So they assume it has some kind of purpose, but literally this is creating a whole new science as we discover what this thing does, how it's important to the body, and, you know, fighting potential. As we know what this does, you know, we will figure out what kind of diseases may affect it and, you know, make some advances in you know, medical knowledge. So like literally, like, they are creating a whole new science with this discovery of this new organ.
It's just kind of awesome, you know, to think about how long, you know, I mean, think about like stuff like the body's exhibit and how much, you know, the human body has been, you know, experimented with and taken apart, you know, piece by piece. And here we are, you know, still finding, you know, new things that, you know, it's just always awesome, you know, when we have these, you know, kind of medical breakthroughs, because oftentimes I feel like, you know, with the medical industry, it's almost like you hit a brick wall and it's, you know, you're just relying on previous knowledge. And now, you know, oh, wait, here's a new organ and, you know, a new pathway to go down and, you know, see what kind of, you know, medical advances may come of this.
And speaking of medical advances, you know, we always talk about robots and the fear of our eventual, you know, robot overlords taking over. But we got a helpful robot this time around that's aiding in treating failing hearts. To this point, a new research published by the Harvard University and Boston Children's Hospital in the Science Translational Medicine Journal. They've come up with a soft robotic sleeve that would be implanted around your heart to basically keep your heart going even in the case of failure. There are other devices that kind of do this, but all these other previous devices have had to, you know, make contact with the blood. Basically, if you have a chamber your heart fail, they can rebuild that chamber, but this is stuff that's going to be actually inside the heart. So a patient would have to be on anticoagulants to fight, you know, your body rejecting these artificial pieces. And there's a higher rate of failure, also a higher rate of possible infections. But with this new device, it actually just wraps around the heart and squeezes it and basically, you know, is a assistive pump. It, you know, squeezes it and works the chambers of your heart like your heart does naturally. But, you know, and some kind of form of heart failure where your heart cannot pump correctly on its own, this device can keep your heart going, you know. And so far, it's not been tested in human use, but they've been able to, you know, implant it in pigs and keep a pig's heart going even after, you know, what would normally be clinical heart failure.
That's just freaking awesome. I mean, and, you know, that's always the, you know, the big risk is not always so much the surgery itself, but all the infection and everything else that, you know, could come, you know, later on because of, you know, something not getting sterilized properly or something to that extent where, you know, this kind of eliminates, you know, that whole aspect. So that's really cool.
Yeah, like I said, the more invasive a surgery, the more potential you have for, like I said, you know, failure later on. But with this being just kind of, you know, a external thing that's not actually invading the heart, you know, it's a lot safer technology than what's been previously used. So you can be like Tony Stark and have a robot in your chest to keep you going. Now if we can just get a cool arc reactor to hook it up to, so you get the little glowing disco ball in your chest.
Yeah, I mean, we seem to be on a positive note, so I guess I'll play the Universal Cynic here. So when our robot overlords take us over, they can keep us in some kind of suspended, you know, animation, but keep our hearts beating so that, you know, we're in just some sort of stasis and we're not really dead, but we're not cognizant either.
Man, what happens if somebody wearing one of these gets tased? EMP is going to suck for these people.
I mean, I guess it couldn't be any worse than if you had, you know, a pacemaker or something.
Yeah, because they say stay away from microwaves and whatnot if you had a pacemaker. So I'm assuming there would be similar, you know, warnings attached to this device. And in other news, recently, the CIA, you know, anyone who's a good, you know, into conspiracy theories and secret stuff the government is doing. The CIA just recently released over 13 million pages of declassified documents, including information on psychic experiments, details from World War II, and even UFO sightings and UFO research.
Including the Stargate Project.
Yes. Which the Stargate Project, from what we know of it, is not... Stargate, as you know it from SG-1, but
experiments. Damn it! Don't ruin my hopes.
Experiments in psychic visions, where they, you know, tested and did experiments on psychics, and also like tried to, you know, psychic spying. Where, hey, if anyone has seen Stranger Things, we've been able to eavesdrop on conversations and see stuff other people are looking at. You know, across remote. I think remote location is one of the terms they used for that. But yeah, up until now, most of the stuff was declassified, like back in the early 90s. But unfortunately, it was only available on like four computers in like the back room of the National Library, so it wasn't very available. And due to a lawsuit by Muckrock, which is kind of a public information nonprofit. They filed a lawsuit against the government, which has been going on for 2 years, and finally they won, and now all these documents and more has been released online. So you can actually go and, if you got time to read through 13 million pages, you know, you can study to your heart's content and see what kind of weird shit the government's been up
to. So I assume by the time we get around to recording the next episode, you'll have all 13 million read and, you know, be ready to give us a full synopsis.
Sure, that's what I'm doing tonight. As soon as we hang up, man, I'm going to start looking up on UFOs.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, did you see the Chichilin Navy... Or Chilean Navy released the footage of their pilots or whatever spotted a potential UFO.
I have not seen that yet.
It's an interesting video. You should check that out. But yeah, this, like I said, this thing has got, yeah, I said, information on UFO studies, you know, old stuff from like world. I mean, there's a lot of information in here if you can sift through it. You know, like there's not a lot of information on what all is there because it's like such a massive document, but I'm assuming in the coming months and stuff we'll start getting some more news on as people have a chance to dig through all this stuff, especially the, you know, the UFO believing community is a rabid bunch of groups. So now that they have some actual documentation to dig through, I'm sure we're gonna see a lot more weird conspiracy books and stuff coming out.
I just wonder how much has been omitted or, you know, stricken, or, you know.
Oh, that's the thing, because you know, once certain things are a certain age, they're no longer considered classified. So, you know, we're getting the full copy without the, you know, the redaction and all that
stuff. But do you really think that, you know, they're going to release it? I would dare to venture to say that at some point, you know, something's been scrubbed.
Whoops, dropped this in the shredder.
You know, well, I mean, maybe not that, but it could be, you know, all right, we're going to make this look like the official document, but we're going to omit this paragraph here, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. I don't know, you know.
Give them something shiny to look at over here so they don't see what we're doing over here.
Exactly.
That's, you know? That sounds very typical.
I mean...
It's definitely a plausible scenario.
You're talking about a government agency, and I don't know one that is 100% transparent.
This is true. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
If this were some tavern tale, all half-truth and senseless adventure.
And it's full of demons.
And it's full of demons.
'Twas disastrous.
It's coming, people. It's coming.
Pitchforks, get your pitchforks here. Can't kill a demon without your pitchforks.
Torches and pitchforks. No defense. You better defend yourself!
No matter how you spend your life, your wit will defend you more often than a sword. Keep it sharp. Have I got some shit to tell you?
I gotta practice my killing.
Let the wicked hear my voice and tremble.
Fly, you fool. Fly.
You have to pick a side. You stay on your path or you cross over to me.
I wanted to get inside so badly I could taste it.
Upon him I will visit famine and a fire, till all around him desolation rings, and all the demons in the outer dark look on amazed and recognize that vengeance is the business of a man.
Caster Quest, now on the ESO Network.
ESO, ESO.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. So, got a fairly extensive lineup here, but with the first item is we're going to talk about Star Wars. And we have...
Before we get in that, though, little breaking news. Rise up, Falcons are going to the Super Bowl, baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another big one for, you know, most folks in the Atlanta area.
Yeah, this is the only second time they've ever done it, so hopefully they won't choke.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know, man. Like, I was really hoping to see the Steelers. I'm sick of the Patriots going to the Super Bowl. But I don't know. I'd like to see, you know, Atlanta come out on top. Absolutely. And, you know, I guess this is finally going to put in motion that we're going to have to do that, you know, batch of homemade Super Bowl chili that we've been talking about for about a year.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. Maybe we'll invite, you know, some of our listeners up and maybe do a little bit of a shindig or something. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe we just get a shitload of folks together at the cigar shop and pack the house and...
Hell yeah.
You know. Who knows?
I'm not sure I spent last Super Bowl Sunday was at the cigar shop and...
I mean, you can't go wrong. Endless supply of cigars, you know, great beer and wine selection, you know, comfortable seating, just all around good environment. Shit, I can't think of a better place myself. Unless it's on my couch. So, with no further ado, so we have Star Wars The Last Jedi, aka Episode 8.
Yeah, they have finally released the official title of the next installment.
So, I gotta ask, you know, you're kind of my Star Wars historian here. What do you think this means?
Well, as I saw floating around the net today, it's like Jedi is also the plural of Jedi. So could mean one Jedi, could mean the last group of Jedi, or the first new Jedi.
So do you think we see the demise of Luke?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's at least not until, you know, the next episode. Like I said, if they kill off Luke, I'm saying it'll be Episode 9 or whatever if they do. But I'd like to see him take on like a more of if... So one of my annoyances, as I've said, with the Disney wiping out the expanded universe, Luke has kind of been shitty in the actual movies because by this time in the previous books, there was a lot of Jedi. He had completely rebuilt the Jedi Order. So I would like to see by the end of these three movies that happen and, you know, him kind of take on more of a Yoda role where he is the grandmaster of the new Jedi Order. Because, yeah, if they just like, you know, I trained Rey a little bit and then died on my couch like Yoda did. That's going to be some bullshit.
Yeah, I don't know. I, you know, with the
I want to see old man Luke fuck up some shit in this new movie. I mean, the cock teases with the last movie. We don't see him to like the final minute. Yeah. He just kind of looks at her like, the fuck you doing on my island?
Yeah.
And don't even get a line out. Yeah. One of the greatest voice actors of our generation doesn't even get a line in his own fucking movie. I mean,
I don't know. You know, I'm curious to see where it takes us in, you know, Disney's Star Wars universe. I don't know, you know, I'm almost wondering if, you know, they purposely didn't put Luke in, you know, a whole lot of the previous film for that last minute just to, you know, see what fans' reactions without, you know, him making a major appearance would be. I don't know, you know,
And speaking of which, there's a new Star Wars novel supposed to be coming out pretty soon where they retell the origin story of Grand Admiral Thrawn, which, like I said, there's already been a book about that, but since it's no longer canon, you know, we gotta get a whole. But it's cool to see him coming back into the
story. Yeah, absolutely.
And with all these little whatever spinoff movies, it'd be kind of cool to see him show up on the big screen at some point, and maybe in one of these standalone films.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't know. You know, I mean, I guess we'll find out December 15th when this film releases. God damn it, we gotta wait forever.
Yeah.
The utter suspense. It's like the movie's done. done.
That Rogue One, you know, tided us over a little bit, but I'm ready for for Episode 8.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like I saw a lot of mixed thoughts and opinions, which we've already talked about Rogue One, so you know, folks can go back to that episode and listen to the segment if they want to hear it. But you know, it was really cool just to see the space battles and that type of stuff really play out. That's one of the things that I've always wanted more in the Star Wars franchise, and you know, that really delivered for me. So up next is, you know, I guess we're gonna flash back to, you know, my, you know, I guess freaking middle school years or whatever, but Power Rangers. So we got our second trailer, and I gotta say,
Power Rangers.
I mean, dude, I'm actually really excited to see this, and I don't know if I'm okay with that.
It's, yeah, because I was like, really, we're getting a Power Rangers movies, but the first trailer, it was like a darker, grittier, like realer world. But you didn't really see that much. You saw much of the pre-Power Rangers. But this is the first time we've actually seen the Power Rangers.
Actually suited up.
The suits, in the Zords. You even see Megazord by the end. You see Goldar in, like, giant form. I gotta say, I'm kind of excited. even though their uniforms look like weird Tony Stark built the Power Rangers. But
I mean, that was almost a given, though. I mean, you know, I guess you couldn't have everybody just running around in, you know, freaking spandex
motorcycle helmets.
I mean, hey, whatever. It worked, right?
Yeah, and we also got our first look at Alpha 5 and Zordon, which now he's not just a floating head in a jar. He's like some kind of weird, like, you know, talking wall thing.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
It was kind of cool. A cool new take on it.
I don't know, man. Like I said, I'm legitimately excited, and I'm kind of conflicted. Like, I just hope that, you know, that all of the awesomeness that this movie has for the potential and everything isn't just displayed in the trailers and the rest of the movie just be a dive bomb.
Yeah.
Like,
even the new version of the putties look cool. I mean, they look like walking asphalt. They're like they're actually kind of badass looking.
And I gotta say, man, Rita, you know, I don't know, it's weird, man.
Yeah. She's kind of hot.
Yeah, like
I'll say it.
I was thinking it, but I was like, I'm so conflicted.
Yeah, Rita's no longer repulsive.
that's. I guess it's just gonna have to be, you know, her attitude and everything else that makes her so repulsive. But you know, at this time, I could go either way.
I just want to hear her say, "Watch my monsters grow." And somebody has to say it's morphin' time. I mean, you get those two things in, I'm like, all right.
Yeah, absolutely. Up next is, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, Kong Skull Island and that type of thing. So, you know, we've seen some additional TV spots now. In fact, you know, there's been, I think, like a total of four different ones. But one of the things that I thought was cool was there's actually a universe now for King Kong and Godzilla. And, you know, it's something that, you know, I've heard folks toss around a little bit, but, you know, now it's official, so we now have the Monsterverse.
Yeah, because they show a little bit of Kong fighting some kind of underground monsters on that island, and they look a little bit like the like a smaller version of the monsters from the last Godzilla movie. So I don't know if they're officially the same thing or not, but they look very similar.
Yeah, and I don't know, man. It just looks really awesome. I you know, it just...
Hey, Samuel Jackson's in it. I'm down.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I it's just sweet, too, that, you know, with so many of these films and everything else, I mean, it's just been a... there's Kong Skull Island, and I think there's already, you know, movies lined up through 2020 to carry it out, so...
I freaking... Yeah, everyone's going with the shared universe theme now. It's just kind of like the new thing that has permeated pop culture.
Well, I don't know. I mean, unofficially, that's always kind of been a thing. I mean, you know, look at how many different renditions of, you know, the, you know, kaiju movies we got between Kong and, you know, Mothra and Godzilla and
I haven't heard there's talk of, like, bringing back the, like, Universal Monsters in their own shared universe series.
So, I mean, you know, maybe now that we got this whole universe, who knows? I mean, I think it would be really cool to see, you know, a lot of these movies with the new technology and, you know, bigger budgets and everything else.
Because isn't, like, Pacific Rim supposed to be part of all this now, too?
I don't know if it's officially. I mean, I would definitely put,
it's the same studio. It's all Legendary Pictures.
Pacific Rim and, you know, the kaiju, you know, style, you know, esque movie. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, to see another, you know, King Kong Godzilla team up, and this time, you know, they're, you know, assisting with, you know, us fighting the, you know, freaking enemies from Pacific Rim or something. Who knows? I mean, like you said, at some point, all of this is probably going to end up getting bundled into one anyway, even if it's just a straight to, you know, Blu-ray release or something. But, I mean, I think there's enough of demand there that folks would give it a try. So next is, so there's been quite a hubbub regarding Hellboy 3 as of, you know, the last few days.
Yeah. Perlman's been campaigning for that hard for like the last couple of years on social media and whatnot, but got a comment from the man himself, Guillermo del Toro.
Well, you know what he did? So he released a poll on Twitter, and basically, you know, he's like, hey, this is one vote that people can't screw up. So it was like, you know, would you be interested in a Hellboy 3? And your answer was, yeah or hell yeah.
Yeah, Guillermo was like, if this gets 100 votes in the next 24 hours. 100 votes or whatever, or I'll actually talk about it. And then it got like something like, over whatever his limit was.
Within the first few hours, he had already had it. And so basically, you know, the agreement was, all right, you know, this gets the 100,000, you know, votes, then I will line up a meeting with Perlman. And then also it was the creator of Hellboy.
Writers or whatever.
The guy... Mignola, that's it. Anyway, basically would have a sit down. So Perlman said he's in.
Was a no brainer.
Yeah,
but you know, before it's all been talked from, it's been one sided. It's all been from Ron, but now that Guillermo's like piped up and like, yeah, this could be a thing. If they can get the money for it, it's like I said, that's pretty much a done deal.
I think the money is, you know, really an issue. You know, I really hope that Mike Mignola, you know, comes through and it's like, hell yeah, let's do it. You know, so I don't know. You know, I mean, this doesn't necessarily mean that it is going to happen, but I'm going to view this as it's a step in the right direction. Because, I mean, you know, we've featured Perlman on this, you know, show quite a few times throughout the year.
First cigar nerd of the year.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, a huge fan. So we'll see, you know. Kind of another thing. So Adult Swim is apparently going to be bringing back Samurai Jack on March 11th. And this was a, you know, show that they did, you know, that really established kind of a cult following. So, you know, this is going to air at 11:30 p.m. So I'm excited, man. I really enjoyed, you know, some of the older stuff that they did. You know, Lord Aku and, you know, all of his shenanigans and everything else. So I don't know. I'll be curious to see how this all plays out, but I'm just stoked that it's coming back.
Yeah, that was always a good series. And speaking of animation, I've not had a chance to sit down and watch it yet, but, you know, as of the 20th, Voltron Season 2 is up on Netflix, so go check that out, and I'll, you know, give my thoughts on it next episode, because I've not had the free time to burn through that yet.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you mean? We got consumed with Underworld movies? What?
Yeah.
That was a thing? So, yeah, I don't know. We'll just have to see what, you know, comes about. Switching gears a little bit into some video game news. So, I'm a big H.P. Lovecraft fan. And, you know, anybody that's been to the Nerd Cave, you know, can see a lot of my Cthulhu, you know, artwork and stuff that I've got displayed down here. So, there is a official video game, Call of Cthulhu, that is coming out soon. And I am super stoked. You know, it looks freaking awesome. We got a new trailer, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be freaking awesome.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. I know I've played some Cthulhu board games and whatnot, but I'm not familiar with him being a subject of a video game yet. So this is kind of an interesting new genre.
Well, there was a game, you know, that basically had the Eye of Cthulhu as like a final boss battle. It was, you know, kind of like a indie release type thing. But, you know, this, you know, basically you're going to play as, you know, Detective Pierce and have to go through and, you know, solve and figure out, you know, all of these strange occurrences and everything else. So you're going to take, you know, a walk into, you know, that dark side of things.
Try not to go mad.
Absolutely. So, I don't know. I'm excited, and it's, you know, a game that I'm really looking forward to. And with that, anything additional you got floating around out there that...
Also, just want to give a shout out to our buddy Tim, the owner of the cigar shop, where, like I said, we do most of our smoking. He just recently had a heart attack, but from all news I'm seeing, he's doing well. So he expect to make a full recovery. We just want to wish him a speedy recovery, and you know, our thoughts go out to him and his family. Any final thoughts on the cigar as we finally wrap this thing up? It, like I said, it almost lasted the whole.
Man,
you still got a little bit left. Yeah. I finally finished mine.
So I'm finally down into the final third now. You know, admittedly, I haven't been smoking continuously because I'm just not one to smoke a cigar, you know, continuously. That's the whole point of smoking is, you know, to sit down and relax and, you know, slow time down a bit. So, you know, it definitely mellowed out, as I mentioned, back toward the end of the main segment, you know, to what I would say a, you know, a milder full, but still definitely a full. And, you know, as the flavor complexities and everything else, you know, they changed quite a bit. And, you know, for folks that, you know, listen to the Beer 30 segment, the bourbon and oak flavors from this brown ale did wonders for the cigar. It was an awesome combination having, you know, that little bit of bourbon and that oaky flavor intermingled with the cigar itself. And, dude, I'm blown away by this cigar, actually.
Yeah, this may be one of my new go-to cigars.
I mean, this was one that, you know, I have smoked, you know, cigars that are double the price of this, and... You know, as far as the flavor, the consistency, and everything else,
yeah, there's been a lot of
not have
medium fulls, but I've not had a good like full strength cigar that maintained that strength through most of the cigar. And like I said, this one, like I said, if you're a strong cigar smoker like I am, I definitely recommend this picking one of these up.
Absolutely, yeah. This is without a doubt going to be one that I'm going to add to my daily rotation.
All right, and with that. be sure and check out StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code CigarNerds for 20% off. Go to Real Men Smoke Cigars. Pick up your badass smoking shirts of not just cigar nerd shirts, but yeah, pretty much any sports team or comic book franchise. Like I said, there's a lot of different designs there that, that you can pick up.
Law enforcement, firefighters, if you can think of a logo or a branding, these guys have got you covered.
Yeah, and if you have your own logo, if you have a club or something and want cigar shirts made, they can do that for you too. That's how we got our shirts. Check out our podcast at cigarnerdpodcast.com. We're also on the ESO network at esopodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at cigarnerdpod. And with that, here's a little piece of advice from Lucian from the First Underworld. You're acting like a pack of rabid dogs, and that gentleman simply will not do. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.